Good morning. I am advertising for Mission Muffins. There are they come here once a month. There's some great folks, and you can read about their program in your in the handout today. But I'd really encourage you, if you've not tried their muffins, it's a worthy cause. Some of you need the extra calories, and they could use the encouragement. So anyway, you can check with them after the service. I've thought a lot about the message today, the story I'm going to tell you. I'm going to condense a significant amount of history in a short amount of time. I'm concerned in our country, especially, that there aren't many heroes and heroines anymore. We have a lot of celebrities, a lot of people that have some good things about them and all that. I'm not dissing that, but we don't have many people that you can say when you're facing something tough and you can say, I want to be like this person. There's people that live with courage, people that live with integrity, people that are willing to sacrifice for something bigger than themselves. And the story that I'm going to be telling you about today, if you read this same kind of thing in the Wall Street Journal tomorrow, you wouldn't be surprised. Human nature, I mean, technology and all this kind of stuff changes pretty dramatically. Human nature has not changed. People are still the way they've always been. Combination of good things about us, some really poor things about us. We have dignity, we have depravity, we have all kind of stuff. But the story today, you're going to see political intrigue going on, you're going to see power grabs, you're going to see there's sexism at some of its ugliest, hasn't changed any. You're going to see racial and ethnic tensions that really lead to some potentially horrible consequences. And so as I'm telling you the story, I hope it'll inspire you to read this in the Old Testament, the book of Esther. But whether you're a guy or a gal, she's really a remarkable woman, and no one would have guessed this early on. So the story, it starts in Persia, which is current day Iran. This was back 500 years before Jesus was born. Persia at this point is like the world power, and the king there, a guy named Xerxes, was at the head of the food chain. Pretty ruthless. He was wealthy. He was arrogant. There was really nothing that stopped him from doing whatever he wanted to do. And the story opens up. He has decided that he wants to celebrate just how fortunate the nation is to have him and all that's happened under his leadership. So he sets up this 180-day series of festivals and kind of open houses and all this kind of just showcasing how wonderful the country is and all that's happened under his leadership. At the end of that 180 days, they're going to have, in the capital city, they're going to have this banquet, 7-day banquet, sparing no expense at all. The Bible says had everything there, and unlimited beverages of the alcoholic nature, which always sets... Let me just say this about this. Where there's a whole lot of drinking, there's not a whole lot of smart that happens. This is free. You probably didn't know that. But I've never heard anyone say, you know, I put away 3 6-packs last night, and I came up with some ideas that are going to change the world. Anyway, that's free. Let me get back to my point. Anyway, so they're having this big deal. The king is meeting with all the men in the capital city, and his wife, the queen Vashti, her name's Vashti, she's meeting with all the women. So they're all meeting, they're having a wonderful time, a lot of eating and drinking, all this kind of stuff. At the end of the 7-day banquet, the king gets this idea, I want to show off my wife. I want everyone to know what a fortunate guy I am and, you know, how fortunate she is to have me, but she's beautiful, she's gorgeous. So he sends word over to the queen, who's meeting with all the women. They've also been drinking. And she has decided that she's just not going to do it. So she sends message back, ain't coming. Now what you've got is this big public thing where the king's been dissed, everyone knows it, and his advisor's saying, king, you better do something quick, because if the other women find out what she's done, man, there is going to be havoc all over the place. And so the king, because of his ego, other stuff like that, he goes, oh, here's what I'm going to do. She is queen no more. She's been banished. She is gone. She is toast. And we're going to say, this is going to happen to any women that treat their husbands this way. We could do a long series of messages about marriage, men and women, and all that. That's not my point. My point is, it really made things messy. They probably could have handled it better. Nevertheless, it handled on the public stage. And this is what it did. It opened the door. Xerxes now is queenless. He's got to find a new queen. How do you do that? Well, this is what they did. He decided to find the new queen, and his criteria were, again, he's kind of a shallow guy. All he wanted was someone that was gorgeous. Couldn't have cared less about anything else. So he sends his team out. They go scouring the country to find the most beautiful young women to compete basically for the Miss Persia contest. The goal is they're going to become the queen. This is not like The Bachelor or anything like that. People didn't apply for this. He had his team scouring all the villages and towns and stuff to find the most beautiful women, and they would require them to come back and compete in this thing. One of the women that was picked, a young lady named Esther, would have never heard of her except for this. She was orphaned when she was a little girl. Her parents were both killed. We don't know why. And she was raised by an older cousin named Mordecai, and he treated her just like his daughter. And so here she is in obscurity and all that, and all of a sudden these guys come through. They say, she's gorgeous. She gets to compete, and they send her back. They never ask her anything about anything. They have no idea what her background is. She happens to be Jewish as well as the cousin that raised her. And in this case, the Jews were a minority, although almost all the Jews in the world at this time lived here in Persia. Decades before that, because the Jewish people had disobeyed God again, he allowed the Persian nation to overrun them. Many of them were taken out, and they were brought, and they were living in Persia. They'd been assimilated, and everybody got along well. But as you and I both know, that there can be pockets of people that just don't like outsiders. They don't like people of a different background. And that's going to come back to play here in a little bit. But no one knows she's Jewish. She wasn't hiding it necessarily. It just wasn't the deal, because all they cared about, does she look good? You qualify. So anyway, she goes back. And for 12 months, there's this whole regime that these women go through. They bring in Weight Watchers. They bring in Shackley. They have Oprah videos they watch. They have Mary Kay comes in. She just started the Mary Kay business. She comes in, and basically they're going to make them as beautiful as they can. And so in the 12 months they have this competition, and Esther wins. She is now the queen. Who would have guessed? Pretty remarkable thing. But anyway, so Esther's now queen. Mordecai, the guy, her cousin that raised her, is now living in the capital city, which is Susa, which is right outside the palace. And probably through Esther's intervention, she got him he's kind of got a mid-level government job working there in the capital. And so they're able to stay close. Things are going pretty well. Mordecai is a man of integrity. He's got a deep faith. At some point along the way, he hears there's a rumor of a plot to assassinate the king. This is in most countries, like we vote. In a lot of countries, they just get whoever's got the biggest sword or guns, or that's how they change administrations. In this case, Mordecai got word to the palace. They were able to squash this plot and save the king's life. Fast forward, there's another guy in the administration. So you've got Xerxes, he's the king, he's the number one guy. He's got his right-hand man, and this guy is a political operative that has spent his whole life trying to figure out how to get himself at the highest position possible. His name is Haman. Haman has been at this for a long, long time. He doesn't really have a moral or ethical compass. Everything points to, how can I advance me and my career? And what we see when the Bible begins talking about Haman, he has been elevated to the number two guy in Persia. Be like being the prime minister or chief of staff or whatever. But you have the King Xerxes, and then you have Haman, who is his number one guy that he relies on. And Haman is, when he hits this point, it's like, this is it. I have arrived. And you can imagine, this is the guy that would like to have a chariot taking him around the capital city, so everybody could just be oohing and awing about him. And he loved it because people were afraid of him, because how he got to that position is a lot of people, well, he did a lot of damage along the way. And he liked people being intimidated. Some of you work in places where the people in leadership really love people to be somewhat scared of them. Haman was this kind of guy. And 99.9% of his life was complete. He was happy because he had arrived. He had it all. There was one thing he didn't have. There was this one guy that whenever Haman saw him, he could tell this guy was not intimidated by him. Didn't do anything illegal or disrespectful of him, but this guy just wasn't that impressed. And it was Mordecai, Esther's cousin. Every time Haman would see this guy, others would bow in deference and, you know, talk about how, you know, almost godlike Haman was, and Mordecai would stand there, wouldn't bow to him. And Haman was furious. Some of you have seen this, maybe in your life or other people's life. Everything can be great except that one thing, and you're fixated on that one thing. This is what Haman did, and it's going to be his undoing. His things are going along. Haman gets more and more angry and outraged that this guy will not cater to him, will not be intimidated, not be in fear of him. And so Haman can't handle it anymore, so he decides, I got to get rid of this guy. I'm going to have him off. But because he's a government, I got to be careful how I do it. I don't want to jeopardize my career. So he hatches this plan. He finds out that Mordecai is a Jew. And he says, you know what? I know what I can do. I can get rid of not only Mordecai, I can get rid of all the Jews because maybe there's some of them that are like him and I don't want to have any of this going on. And the fact that the Jews have another God means that maybe there's some, they have a higher allegiance and I'm just not going to put up with that stuff. So he comes up with this plan and so he presents it to the king. He comes to the king in the guise of there being a threat to national security. He comes to the king and says, King, we've got a threat. We need to deal with this. There's a people group in our country that have very different customs, very different ways, and I am deeply concerned because also, and that was actually true, the Jews did have different customs and ways, but then he tells a lie, he goes, and they disrespect all of your laws and rules. They're lawbreakers, and by inference, they're going to do something to try to overthrow. And the king is like, well, we can't have that. Never mentions that they're Jews, and the Jews have been assimilated for decades into the country, and they're fine. But Haman doesn't want to have any problems, so he just says it's a people group of a different culture that are causing problems. And the king says, well, what do you think we should do? He says, I think what we need to do is we need to annihilate them. We need to purge our nation of them, which means we need to kill them all. And he said, and I'll tell you what's going to happen is we seize all their property. That becomes part of ours, and they're doing pretty well. And I'll make sure that from everything we get, I'll put $50 million in, that's the equivalent in today's money, so that all of the soldiers that go after them, there's a bounty they can have on these people. And the king thought, well, national security, it seems like a wise move. Haman, I trust your advice, sign it into law. And what they did is they, to decide when they were going to actually implement this as part of their culture, is they took some dice and threw it, and the date that came up, that was the date. The dice were called Pur, P-U-R. And so they decided that's what's going to happen, is they set the date, it's now law. They're going to annihilate all the Jews. Mordecai, because he's fairly well connected, even though he's mid-level in the government, he hears about this, and he's really concerned, because that means not only him, you don't get the sense he's all that consumed about what's happening for him, but all of the people, all the Jews, be wiped out. And this would have essentially eliminated Jews from planet Earth. So Mordecai does what he needs to. He realizes that Esther is the queen. She has the king's ear, potentially. And so he makes sure he gets word to her through her common people that they had. He said, Esther, you've got to do something about this. You need to go to the king. You need to talk him out of this plan. And you have the capacity to do that. And I want to read to you the dialogue they had. You see this in chapter 4 of the Old Testament book named after her. She gets this message from Mordecai, and this is what it says. Then Esther told Hathach. Hathach was her assistant. Esther told Hathach to go back and relay this message to Mordecai. Quote, all the king's officials and even the people of the provinces know that anyone who appears before the king in his inner court without being invited is doomed to die unless the king holds out his gold scepter. And the king is not called for me to come to him and for 30 days. That if you've ever been in situations like this where someone has absolute power, they can have, there are things that go along with that that you and I are thinking that's ridiculous, but that's just how it works. In this case, the king never liked being interrupted. And if he didn't take initiative, if someone were to interrupt whatever he's doing, and if he happened to be in a bad mood or he didn't like it at all he had to do was this, and that was, he just pointed his and they're gone. He could just say, I want that, they've interrupted me, they're out of here. And Esther knew that, and he hadn't summoned her. For her to summon him was so out of place. And she's wanting Mordecai. This is scary stuff. If I do that, I'm putting my life, not just my queen part, I'm putting my life in jeopardy. Anyway, so Hathach gave Esther's message to Mordecai. Mordecai sent this reply back to her. Don't think for a moment that because you're in the palace, you will escape when all the other Jews are killed. You're one of us. If you keep quiet at a time like this, deliverance and relief for the Jews will arise from some other place, but you and your relatives will die. Mordecai had a strong sense of God being sovereign and God very, very present and God having purposes, and he believed that God had a purpose for the Jewish people. Whether that included Mordecai or Esther or some of the ones currently, he didn't know. But he knew that God had a plan. God would be good on that. But they had to decide if they're going to cooperate with it or not. And he wanted Esther to know, you may make a decision out of fear. That won't change reality. It might change yours, though. He goes on to say, but who knows if perhaps you were made queen for just such a time as this. Then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai. Go and gather together all the Jews of Susa, which was the capital city, and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. My maids and I will do the same. And then, though it is against the law, I will go to see the king. If I must die, I must die. So Mordecai went away and did everything as Esther had ordered him. It's really a picture of courage. She trusted Mordecai. She had grown up with him. She knew he would never ask her to do something that was out of line. It was the right thing to do, but it was very scary. She was literally putting her life at risk. But she understood the stakes were much bigger than her. And so she asked that all the Jewish people in that area to fast and pray, to ask God's guidance and help, and then she would go and meet with the king. She does. She comes up with an idea. She goes and meets the king, and good news is she doesn't get killed. He's okay. He's fair. He likes her. He sees her, and he says, come on in. What can I do for you? And she goes, well, I have a request, but first, I'm hosting a banquet, and I only want you, and I want your number two guy to come, Haman, to come to this banquet I'm going to have tomorrow night. And he said, sure, I'd be glad to. So they come. Haman is thinking, I'm in the inner circle. Here I am. I'm with the king. I'm with his queen. How could life get better than this? They get there. They have this huge blowout party. I'm sure there was a lot of entertainment. The Bible also says there's plenty of drinking. There's a lot of this goes on at these parties. And during that, and you'll see this kind of happens sometimes. The king said, well, Esther, you invited us here. It's been a great time. What do you want from me? And I'll give you up to half my kingdom. And I'm sure she was thinking, I think I'll take half of it right now, and all my people stay in that half. You stay on your half. She didn't do that. She said, King, thank you. Here's my request. Will you come again tomorrow night? We're going to continue this banquet and the festivities, and after that, then I'll make my request. He goes, that would be great. And I'm sure Haman is thinking, wow, does life get any better than this? This is, I've achieved it. Nothing could be better. And they leave, they're heading home. Haman is like on cloud nine. And then all of a sudden, who does he see? Mordecai. And he is back to just absolute rage and fury that this guy doesn't get it. He goes home, he whines and belly aches to his family, and he determined that the first Jew killed is going to be Mordecai. The king, on the other hand, goes home that night. And again, we don't know why Esther said, can we wait and do it the next night? It may have been out of fear because she realized, boy, when I identify myself as one of these Jews, I'm now a lawbreaker and I'm targeted. She's taking a big risk when she talks to him. It may have been that she just had a sense God was saying, I want you to wait for another night. But listen to what's going on behind the scenes that she didn't know. Haman's gone home. He's furious, can't wait for Mordecai to be killed. The king goes home, and the king gets in, and he just has insomnia. And he can't sleep well. So he does what makes a lot of sense. He calls one of his servants to come and read the royal journal or the royal diary. If you want to get sleepy, read one of those things. It'd be like a congressional budget report or the Mueller report or something. You start getting on page 400, and anyway, so the servant's reading that, and they come across this event that had happened some years back. And it was the assassination plot that had been foiled. And the king said, whatever happened about it? Who was it that was part of that? And he said, it's a guy named Mordecai. And he goes, well, what did we do for him? Because, you know, when saving my life, I mean, the whole country benefited because look how great I am. I mean, we need to do something for this guy because of the wonderful deed he did. And he said, well, according to the record, we never did anything. We forgot. The king can't believe it. He said, well, immediately we need to do something to honor this guy for having saved my life. I mean, our nation should show their appreciation. So he says, and they come up with this plan. They're going to give him one of the king's robes. They're going to put him on one of the king's horses. And they're going to parade him around the capital city and honor him as the guy that saved the king's life. And he said, who best to do this for us than Haman? So now Haman is required by the king to walk along like this with a guy that he absolutely despises, singing his praises for having saved the king. It's going to get so much worse for Haman. So much worse. And God is working all this behind the scenes. So that night they have another dinner party, the second part of it. It's all going really, really well. And then when it's wrapping up, the king says, so Esther, what is it that you wanted from me? And she goes, king, here's my request, that you not allow me and all of my people, the Jews, be murdered and executed. And he's stunned. He goes, well, why would you think that would happen? She goes, well, the decree that you signed has sealed our fate. And then he realizes that this people group that Haman told him about were the Jews. And the king didn't have, he wasn't against them racially or anything like that. And he's furious that he got duped into this thing. He kind of storms out for a minute in his anger. When he comes back in, he sees Haman, who knows the jig is up, grabbing hold of Esther and saying, please, you've got to protect me. I'm in big trouble. The king sees it and thinks he's assaulting the queen. That's the end of Haman's story and his head. He's gone. And what happens is the king puts in place a plan that protects and saves all of the Jews in Persia. And it's a remarkable story. Many people in Persia then began embracing the God of the Jews when they heard the story and understood all that had gone on and how God had been working behind the scenes. And to this day, this festival of Purim, which comes from the name of the dice, the pur that were thrown, it's one of the biggest festivals of the Jewish year. And it all goes back to this orphaned girl who became queen, who risked her life on behalf of all of her people. And those of us that are followers of Christ realize that God had made good on his promise to protect his people, because the Jewish people were the ones that had been showing the way. And then when Jesus comes, there's a context so we understand he really is the one God sent, the one he sent to take our place. It's an amazing story. I hope you'll read. I want to give you four things from it real quick to hang on to, and the take-home sheet will help you go further. The first thing here is never ignore the importance of getting wise advice. Esther was willing to listen to Mordecai, even when he told her things she didn't want to hear. Wise advice doesn't always feel good. But it protects us from doing something that our emotions might be leading us one way, or our personal bent might, but wise advice is always helpful. Haman didn't seek wise advice. He only listened to his own big ideas, and he paid a huge price for it. Proverbs 12:15, a fool thinks he needs no advice, but a wise man listens to others. You may think you've got the best idea ever, and if it is, good ideas withstand scrutiny. A good idea will hold up if you ask someone, do you think this is a good idea? Someone that's wise and has got some insight. It's when we aren't willing to ask, probably because we're afraid we're going to get input we don't want. Listen to advice and accept instructions, and in the end you will be wise. Esther showed wisdom. Haman, not so much. Second thing is, never minimize the value of being faithful, like being faithful today. Big things and little things. In fact, some of us will say, well, if I were in Esther's position, of course I would have stood up to the king. Not necessarily. If you're not willing to be faithful in small things right now, there's no reason to think that when the big things come and when the stakes are really high that you're going to do any different. Never minimize the value of faithfulness and the fact that God is working. We'll see this in a minute. And he's going to use those small steps of faithfulness to build something in you to prepare you for other things. It says, 1 Corinthians says, let nothing move you as you busy yourself in the Lord's work. Be sure that nothing you do for him is ever lost or wasted. And what I think about this is Mordecai. Here's a single guy. Best we know he was single. He ends up being the next family member that needs to take care of this young girl whose parents have been killed. And now he's got to figure out, how am I going to do this? And it sure changed his lifestyle. It probably changed a lot of things in his life, but he was willing to be faithful to take care of this young girl and give her a family that she needed. And as time goes on, he stays connected to her, and you begin to see how God had been positioning from early time to put Esther in the place where she was. And Mordecai discovered something, and this is the third point I want to make too, is never forget that God is working behind the scenes. You and I we're not required to know what he's doing, to know that he is actually working right now and in ways that we can't see. We don't have to understand it. He doesn't owe us an explanation, but God is working, and there are things that he wants to do in and through us, and if we'll let him, over time, there's a chance that we'll see some of it. For I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord. They are plans for good, not for disaster, to give you a future and a hope. Think about this. Esther is a young girl, and she's now an orphan. She loses her parents. She's growing up. She's developing. And all of a sudden, some guys come into town, and they whisk her away. She's going to be in this beauty pageant to become queen. Not necessarily her life goal, but this is happening. She's being wrenched away from all that she knew. She becomes queen. And then, as the queen, when it looks like life's going pretty well, she's now faced with a decision that could cost her life. God knew all of the details of this all along the way, and he was preparing her for it. Isaiah says, my thoughts are nothing like your thoughts, said the Lord. My ways are far beyond anything you can imagine. For just as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. This last one, let me take a minute and I'll see if I can explain it and put it together. Never underestimate what God can do in and through you. Several years ago, I used to own a landscape business. I sold it. Becky and I were pretty sure God wanted us to spend our full time doing ministry. So I went on staff at a church in Richmond. I didn't know anything about pastoring kind of stuff. And showed up, and one of the first assignments, I was given a set of index cards with names on it. And they said, well, these are people that visited our church in the last year. We'd like you to call them and introduce yourself to them. I didn't want to do any of that. I couldn't email them because email wasn't happening much then. This was 86. And I was just thinking, I don't want to call these people. They don't want to hear from me. I don't want to talk to them. We have that in common, but it's an assignment I was given. So I start calling. I was in the basement of my in-law's house, and I start calling. I'm just really not wanting to do it. And then it gets worse, because I got somebody on the phone. Someone answered. And I said, hi, I'm Rusty. I'm new at the church here. I saw you visited several months ago. And would you like to get together for coffee? And then the worst thing ever, he said yes. And I'm thinking, this guy must have no life at all, that he's saying yes to me, oh, this is just going to be horrible. But I do it anyway, because that was my assignment. So anyway, we'll call him Jimmy. I met Jimmy for coffee, and here's the deal. When I called him, he said, do you know what was going on with me when you called? And I said, I have no idea. Your name was on an index card. He said, I was in the bathtub right on the edge of committing suicide, and I had just thrown out this prayer, God, if you exist, let me know, or I'm gone now. And then the phone rang. And I'm thinking, huh? I don't get this. He goes, here's the thing: Jimmy had been an amateur but very successful bodybuilder. It was what his whole life image was on his physique and how he looked, and he was really good at it. And he was doing so well, and then all of a sudden he got this some kind of an amoeba or a parasite, and he lost like 50 pounds in no time. He's now skin and bones, and his whole life was destroyed as far as he was concerned. He's in that tub. Doctors can't do anything about it, and he's going to end his life. And then I call. I had no idea that I was doing anything but something I didn't want to do, going through a list of stuff. I was being faithful to it, but my attitude wasn't wonderful, but I did do the right action. And Jimmy ended up becoming a follower of Jesus Christ because he saw God working in a way that only God could have, and he was convinced it was God. Here's the thing is, you and I don't know what God's doing in and through us in the small little things, but we're being watched. There's an impact to it. And like we see with Esther and Mordecai, we should never underestimate what God wants to do in and through us if we just let him. Jesus says this in Mark 10. He said, with man this is impossible. With God, all things are possible with him. What are you and I going to let him do in and through us? It may have a risk to it, but I promise you it's worth it. Let's pray. God, you know every one of us here. You know everything about our lives. There's some of us that have at this point, we've not chosen to follow you. Maybe we still have questions. Maybe we have concerns that if we surrender our life to you, you may lead us the way we don't want to go. But God, all the evidence is that you would never mislead us. And we desperately need what Jesus provided for us by sacrificing his life so we could have forgiveness and a right relationship with you and peace and hope. So for anyone here that's not yet accepted you, I pray that the picture they get of you here is one that you're a God that can be trusted. There's some of us here that we like the story, we've even heard it before, but this idea of depending on you before we make decisions is kind of foreign because we're used to just doing what we want to do. We don't really have a pattern of giving you first shot at our big ideas or even asking you what it is you want. So we spend our time, we spend our money, we spend our energies and our talents and all that. However, we feel like we actually live as practical atheists. And the shame of that is we miss out on the purpose you have us here for. I pray that you would speak to each of us and that you would stir things up for us before this day's over. And we would bow our knee to you, trust you, and give you free rein over our lives like we saw with Esther and Mordecai. Please speak to us in Christ's name. Amen.